Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Explore Northern Canadian culture, but bundle up first. Hi friends, welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom for day two of our travel article. Today is June 7th and we're on page 17 of your magazine discussing a nature cruise through Northern Canada. Now, taking a cruise through the icy Arctic does sound very beautiful, but it's a little bit of a different situation than taking a cruise to the tropics. And one of the ways it's very different is just what you have to pack. So with me to help us understand more about this article, first of all, Lois, welcome back.
Thank you, Naomi. It's good to be back and good to talk about all this northern weather and northern adventure.
Now, you've done a lot of traveling.
Yes, yeah, and in the north, too. And you know what? I actually like the north. You just have to dress for it.
Okay.
I tell people they have the proper clothing and you'll actually have a good time.
So what is maybe like a must-have item that you would pack if you're going somewhere cold?
Okay. Number one is look at your feet, folks. You have got to wear good boots. And I don't mean high-heeled boots that are just leather. They have to look like you jumped off the space shuttle, basically.
Right. Lots of lining in there, something very, very warm and waterproof.
Exactly, waterproof, and the feet will be kept at the proper temperature. But, Naomi, the important thing is they can't sweat.
Right, yes. And the other thing is the bottoms have to be, they have to have a good grip.
Good traction.
Because I have hurt myself very badly falling on the ice.
Yeah. So when my husband and I lived in Northern Canada, we spent a lot of money on good boots. You look at them as an investment. But if your feet don't change in size, they'll probably be with you good 15, 20 years, that pair of boots.
Good point. Okay, also back with us today, we have Bill.
Great to be here, Naomi. Very interesting trip up north. So, and I really enjoyed yesterday learning about some of the history, some of these disastrous expeditions that they had.
And yeah, it was interesting.
Know, it's, you know, it's a shame that these guys had to go up there and many of them lost their lives.
Well, yes, and I think part of it comes back to this idea of they weren't prepared. They didn't know what they had to bring with them. They didn't have the proper supplies. We read some stories about just the wrong kinds of food or not enough food.
Yeah, the wrong food. And in fact, that was one of the problems. Some of these expeditions, they had lead poisoning because lead was used to solder close the canned food. And when we solder something, that means we melt this lead. It's kind of like a metal. We melt it to seal the can. Well, this sealing actually then leaked into the food and actually became poison for the people consuming it later.
Right. This sealant, it was really bad for you. So it did some horrible things to them, and it ultimately led to them passing away before mm-hmm. they could be rescued. So pretty dangerous. Bill, you've been north before.
Yeah, I actually did go to Alaska a few years ago and spent some time up there. Fascinating. And I mentioned yesterday that it's rugged, but there's beauty in all of it. It's astounding beauty.
For sure. So what's on your must-pack list?
Oh, I would say you definitely have to wear a good hat. Make sure you cover your head up. It's an easy way to get sick if you don't cover your head up. So make sure you've got a good ski cap or a tassel cap, we might say, and you want to have it on at all times.
Cover up your ears,
yep.
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gets very, very chilly. Finally with us again, Simon.
It's great to be back, but I will be honest, you guys make Northern Canada sound very depressing. You're talking about feeling cold and eating poisonous food and disastrous expeditions. I think Northern Canada is probably an amazing place. I look at some of the pictures we have in our article here, just beautiful scenery and landscape. And where else are you going to see a young polar bear playing around
that
in the wild?
Definitely true. And the pictures do, I think, do it justice. There's some gorgeous photographs here. But again, it's about being prepared. So, Simon, when cold weather hits, what do you make sure you have with you?
I think I'd bring my camera so I could record all of the wonderful Northern Canadian experiences.
Just make sure you have a good case for it in case you drop it on the ice. All right. So being prepared when you go on this type of trip is important. But as Simon and Bill both said, there's a lot of beauty to behold up here, a lot of gorgeous things to see. And we're going to learn more today about what a visit there will really be like. So let's continue with our reading on page 17.
Northern communities. The sad stories of the high Arctic didn't end with the expeditions. Grease Fjord, Canada's most northerly community, today is a thriving village of 135 people with a school, medical facility, telephone, and internet. But back in the early 1950s, when the Canadian government wanted to stake a claim to the Arctic and needed residents to do it, several Inuit families were relocated with promises of good hunting and the ability to return home in 2 years if they wished. None of this turned out to be true, and the families lived for 2 years in tents in that awful climate, just 960 miles from the North Pole. The government eventually made a settlement payment and a formal apology, and today the locals greet the occasional tourist, eager to demonstrate their clothing, their food, their way of life.
Okay, so yesterday we started by learning about all of these disastrous explorations, these various groups of people who headed up there to try to find a way through and ended up getting stuck. And rescue teams would go up and also be unsuccessful. As a result, though, they did map out a lot of this region. They understood what was where and got a bit more of an idea of the geography of it. But we see that the sad stories, unfortunately, did not end. Simon, I know you want to make this place look good, but we have to cover a couple of other things first, don't we?
Oh, it's sad. This poor Grease Fjord, a town with a sad little history. Fortunately, though, it seems that in this case, everything turned out well in the end. It tells us here that this town, Grease Fjord, is a thriving village, which means it's doing very well. It's very healthy. Even if it does only have 135 people.
Wow. So when I think of a thriving town, Lois, I don't think of 135 people.
No, I was thinking of more of 135,000 myself, Naomi. That's a thriving town to me.
Right. If something is thriving, it means it's very healthy
exactly.
or successful. And so this village does have a handful of people, and they have more than just people there.
Well, they have a school, medical facility, they do have telephones, and the internet.
Okay, have you ever visited a place like this?
Some of the villages in Alaska were like that. It's surprising how sparse, and I remember driving through some of these places and wondering, why are these people living here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. I don't know what would draw them there or keep them there.
Yeah, I've been to fly-in communities, so you could only fly in. I guess you could boat in, but some of them I'm even thinking might not have been the best option. You flew in. One of them was called Puckettawagon, and that's about this side. 135 people, Puckettawagon, Manitoba, and also Lynn Lake, Manitoba.
Okay.
Really small communities like this in Canada.
But they can be exciting places to go. However, when there's so few people, I'm going to come back to this again. You need to be prepared. When we talk about getting there and being there, on page 17, we have a sidebar, Bill.
Yeah, we see that sidebar there. Getting there, being there, and Adventure Canada, which is the one running these ships, they run itineraries from mid-July to October that include the Northwest Passage and the very high Arctic and lower Arctic areas.
Okay, so a place that if you explore it, you will be among the few people in the world who have. It's pretty unusual, very special to do this kind of trip. How long will it take you, Simon?
They say their average trip is about 9 days, but the thing that I thought was most interesting is that the trips are on board a clipper ship. which is kind of an old sailing vessel. And they actually mention here that these are refurbished, which means they're fixed up and modernized, Scandinavian ships. And they can fit 118 people, which is almost the size of Grease Fjord.
So when the tourists come, the population doubles.
Exactly. And as many tourists in town as the population, like you said, Naomi. And these clipper ships are amazing. I've got an experience on one, the Blue Nose 2, not with it being out at sea, but in port. And they're just an adventure in themselves, getting to tour them and getting to see how different sailing was in that day than it is today.
They add one more thing to our list of things you have to bring, though, in this sidebar. They mention that you need to bring a lot of money because things in the Arctic are very expensive. Why is that?
Well, they have to bring everything in, mostly, Simon, unless you eat locally. And locally, there might be some type of fish you don't enjoy. It might be whale blubber. Might be things like that. But I have to tell our readers that there are some wonderful fish in that part of the country.
Okay, and we'll learn about some of the other options you can try for your diet while you're up there as well. But a hamburger costing $30, my goodness, it is an expensive trip. And you'll notice if you start to price it out and look at the hotels and the transportation, it is a big investment to take a trip like this. But again, it's a very special experience.
Well, it's once in a lifetime trip. It's a once-in-a-lifetime trip, and you'll remember it forever. One thing I wanted to point out, we see right in the middle there, an ice-hardened hull on that boat, Naomi. And what that means is it's extra thick up in the front of the ship so it can break through the ice. And actually, we call those boats icebreakers because they often have to do that. They have to go through places. They have to break through ice 3-4 feet thick.
Right. So that the bigger ships can get through.
Yep.
Okay, so here we are up in Grease Fjord, and it's a tiny little place, and it's thriving. It's going well. There's not a lot of people, but they are happy. They have what they need. However,
it hasn't always been that way. We see some hints here about a very sad story that seems to have started in the 1950s. It says, when the Canadian government wanted to stake a claim to the Arctic, which means they wanted to show that it was part of their own territory, part of Canada.
Right. So how do you do that? How do you stake a claim to territory?
Well, you put people out there. And so what they needed were residents. They needed some of their citizens to go out and live there and say, this is ours.
Okay. Now, could you get some fearless volunteers to try to do something like that? How do you convince someone to move to the barren Arctic North?
Well, you usually promise them something. Nowadays, you might give them a northern living allowance, and that will entice them to go. But here we have residents that were promised something by the government. Was good hunting, the ability to return home in 2 years if they wished. So, yes, things were put out there to get them to go, but they would get to return as well.
Right. So they said, here's the deal. Help us out with this. We promise it'll be great. There's so many good opportunities for you. We'll even let you take a trip back in 2 years. And then?
Well, it tells us on page 18 that things didn't quite work out that way. This ended up being a lot like those early Arctic expeditions. And it seems that after 2 years, they were still living in tents out in the ice.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
That does not sound appealing to me at all.
Well, no, that would be awful because it would be freezing cold up there. They're living in tents that are not going to give them much shelter from the cold or the wind. And it looks like the government kind of abandoned them, broke the promises that they had made to these people.
And to give us an idea of exactly where they are, we see that this is just 960 miles from the North Pole. So we're getting as far north as you can get at this point. Now, this was a bad decision on the government's part. It was dishonest. However, we see that since then, things have changed.
That's right, Naomi. We see the government eventually made a settlement payment, which is a good thing, and a formal apology. And today, the locals greet the occasional tourists. Obviously, they've stayed there, or some of them have, eager to demonstrate their clothing, their food, their way of life.
Okay, let's back up a second. Settlement payment and formal apology.
Well, I think basically the government gave them money to sort of make up for the suffering that these people had undergone. And in terms of a formal apology, I think it's just nice to sort of sometimes hear that people are admitting that you have been treated badly.
Right. And I think this is something that it seems sort of insignificant because you don't really fix anything by saying you're sorry. But the idea of a government acknowledging that it handled something badly, I think is actually a very important thing because it shows that we're progressing towards something better. We're trying to make wiser choices in the future.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's an admission of, hey, we made mistakes in the past. Let's try and correct them in the future. We had done the article about South African bicyclists, mm-hmm. and I think of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that they had in South Africa where there were formal apologies.
Right.
And actually what it did was help heal the nation. So, mm-hmm. and I think that's actually part of it, the government acknowledging mistakes.
Right. So they said, hey, we know we kind of misled you here. We're sorry, and we will help you out with your living expenses if you want to stay here. And they said, actually, okay. Yeah. And we see that today there still is a community there, and they are happy to welcome tourists. Again, we see some pictures on page 17 of the culture. We can see this lady in particular, her beautiful jewelry, and there's a lot more to learn. If you do a little more research, you can visit some of the websites and see more pictures. It really does look fascinating. So I'm excited, actually, to consider a trip up there if the opportunity ever came along. But we do have to watch out for one other thing. Let's find out what it is as we continue our reading.
Watch for icebergs. Eventually on our trip, we hit nearly 80 degrees north latitude. And had there been time, we probably could have sailed right to the North Pole. We didn't start seeing serious icebergs, much less the thickly packed ice I remembered from a previous trip in the 1990s, until heading south toward Greenland. Finally, we had scenery that looked properly Arctic, cold, windswept, rocky, desolate, gray, and full of the most fantastic icebergs with sloping curves, sharp towers, and slanted shelves, often cut with artful striations of trapped rock and dirt. We wove our way through them to the beach of Cap York, coming close enough to see pockmarks where seawater had eaten into the ice. In the next few days, we visited other communities and other islands, and we walked to the tongue of a glacier where two young Inuits on our staff did a thrumming throat song in an echoing ice cave.
Now, when we say watch for icebergs, actually we're not talking about them being a danger at all. We're talking about them being something gorgeous that we'll want to notice on this cruise. How do we start this section, Bill?
Well, we see eventually on our trip, we hit nearly 80 degrees north latitude. And actually, the Earth being divided up by latitude and longitude, of course, the lines that we can measure where we are. So, in latitude will be the distance north or south of the equator.
All right. So, we're getting nearly as north, again, as you can possibly go before you start going south again. So, according to our author, had there been time, we probably could have sailed right to the North Pole. And so, they're very, very close, is what she's pointing out. But what are they noticing up here?
Well, it's interesting because we actually saw on our first day an indication that maybe not everything is right with the environment in this Arctic area. We saw that when we heard about the polar bear being among the birds, which was supposed to be a rare thing because polar bears should be out on the ice. But here, our writer mentions that they can't see the pack ice that she saw on a previous trip back in 1990. And so we know there is much less permanent ice up there in the Arctic than there once was.
Right. So she's remembering, you know, 20 years ago, by now, at this point, I would have seen more icebergs. But she didn't see much of that until they started to head toward Greenland. Going up to the top of the next column, we see that finally, at that point, what did they see?
Yeah, it looks like things are starting to look more familiar. Finally, we had scenery that looked properly Arctic. So we've got the cold, the windswept, rocky, desolate, gray, and full of the most fantastic icebergs.
Okay, so all those words there, cold, windswept, rock, can you talk about those a
little
bit?
Yeah, we got some great adjectives here. And just describing what you're seeing, and it's different, obviously, our writer or author here, it's different to the kind of world she lives in. So she's being very descriptive for her readers.
Windswept, I think of hair.
That's definitely a good one.
The idea that the wind has sort of come right through and changed the shape of something. Rocky, much like that picture we saw on page 17. Desolate.
Desolate means like there's almost like no living thing. So you're not going to see a lot of trees or bushes or grass or flowers.
Okay. And full of what, Simon?
Well, they say it's full of the most fantastic icebergs. And so, again, we have a reminder that icebergs aren't only dangerous and deadly. They can also be very beautiful.
Right. And they are also described here.
Right. They are. I love how they're described. With sloping curves, sharp towers, and slanted shells. It just sounds so appealing.
It does.
Sounds like an art form.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think it's interesting because when I think of an iceberg in my head, I just think of a big, you know, block of ice and snow. I mean, I don't really think about all these different textures and shapes that she mentions.
No, and it's very, you know, rich in variety. And we see, she says they are often cut with artful striations of trapped rock and dirt. And those would be, you know, just we might see a picture of an iceberg, and there's like these strange lines going through it. It's not all white. There will be areas that might be green or red or blue, depending on the mix in them.
Right. I haven't ever seen this really in real life, but you have, Bill.
Yeah, I've seen that where there. I have actually seen lines in ice. So, you know, like in some glacier areas, and it's just you're wondering what in the world is going on there.
Did it surprise you?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. I remember seeing some that were red. And the guide explained that this was because of the what was in the water, it coming up from the ground. And I can't remember the substance, but it was causing these red lines in them.
Okay. Lois, how about you? Do you remember being surprised by
You know, with me, it's all been like the glaciers like Bill's talking about. And I just remember thinking they look like little, to me, little threads of a fine little jewel running through them. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. But then when my parents visited Newfoundland, they saw them from the east coast. Of Newfoundland, the icebergs going by. And that is extremely interesting.
Okay, so that's on the other side of Canada.
That's on the other side of Canada. That's right.
Okay, so they are each kind of their own special work of art. And we see a few examples in our photographs. And even in there, you can see quite a variety. But as we continue, they are weaving their way, Simon.
That's right. So they're not able to go in a straight line. They're having to move around these different icebergs. And so they're kind of going around them in the same way you might weave thread.
Yeah, exactly. So in and out and around. They eventually make their way to the beach of Cap York, coming close enough to see pockmarks. What's a pockmark?
Pockmark is going to be like a hole in something, and it, these small holes are actually made in the ice by seawater, and actually I think the salt might eat away at the ice, creating these tiny, we might even say dimples would
Good.
Be another word.
Yeah, that's a nicer word. Yeah.
Little indentations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Finally, Lois.
Well, on our last paragraph for this reading, it says, in the next few days, we visited other communities and other islands, and we walked to the tongue of a glacier where two young Inuits on our staff did a thrumming throat song in an echoing ice cave.
Okay, so they had a lot of opportunities to visit these different communities, and you'll notice that she uses that word community because probably these are even smaller than Grease Fjord or maybe thereabouts. Very few people living in different communities in this area, but there is a lot to discover. And what are we talking about here? First of all, the tongue of a glacier. I'm picturing a big piece of ice sticking its tongue out at me.
Yeah, that would be the piece of the glacier that is sticking out the farthest, and most likely that's going to be the part that's going to be breaking off the soonest.
Okay. Mm. It's also probably lowest onto the water where you can sort of step onto there. And here they went into sort of this ice cave through the kind of pathway that this made. And inside that cave, something very interesting went on.
Yeah, there were two young Inuits doing some throat singing.
Yeah, they call it thrumming throat song.
Okay, have you ever heard this type of music before?
I have. And our listeners can listen to it very easily by typing in Inuit throat singing on something like YouTube.
Can you describe it?
I thought you were going to do some of that for us right now, Simon.
Too.
You sang yesterday.
No, that's not right.
It's not, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Can you explain
he's
it?
Right.
It's like singing in your throat, making sort of a rhythmic noise in your throat.
You can definitely see it on YouTube. I have seen it on Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in Canada, and it's very unique. I've never seen it done anywhere else.
There's a group of Aboriginal people in Taiwan who are known for throat singing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember watching a program with a friend of mine who knew about this as well. You will find it in various Aboriginal cultures around the world. Fascinating and very different from the kind of songs that we're used to hearing.
Yeah, they're not singing words like we would think of it. They're not singing through lyrics. They're just making noise deep inside of them. So what's interesting is that – wasn't that beautiful? They're doing it into an echoing ice cave, so they're getting even greater effect.
To me, this sounds like the experience of the trip. It sounds like such a fascinating moment that would be very hard to recreate, you know?
Yeah, and don't let Bill and my failed attempts at throat singing make you feel that throat singing is not something you should try to listen to.
Because and it maybe really try is, to do. I think you should try to do it.
It really is a wonderful experience to have the chance to hear this kind of singing.
It is. Friends, why don't we make that our little extra homework assignment today? Take a moment when you finish listening to search for that on the internet and see what you can find. See what you think about it and let us know. Maybe even post a link to one of those videos that you find on our Facebook page and come back tomorrow as we finish up this article.